Chapter 23. Good, but I choked with rage whilst drinking it. A florin for a bottle, and that bottle having the words Imperial Pint in bold relief on the surface. It was too much. I intended not to say anything about it, but I must speak. A florin a bottle, and that bottle a pint. Oh, for shame. For shame. I can't cork down my indignation. I froth up with fury. I am pale with wrath, and bitter with scorn. As we drove through the old city at night, how it swarmed and hummed with life. What a special clatter, crowd, and outcry there was in the Jewish quarter, where myriads of young ones were trotting about the fishy street. Why don't they have lamps? We passed by canals seeming so full that a pailful of water more would overflow the place. The lackwaste place calls out the names of the buildings. The town hall, the cathedral, the arsenal, the synagogue, the statue of Erasmus. Get along. We know the statue of Erasmus well enough. We pass over drawbridges by canals, where thousands of barges are at roost. At roost at rest. Shall we have rest in those bedrooms, those ancient lofty bedrooms, in that inn where we have to pay a florin for a pint of pasta at the New Bath Hotel on the Boomges? If this dreary edifice is the New Bath, what must the Old Bath be like? As I feared to go to bed, I sat in the coffee room as long as I might, but three young men were imparting their private adventures to each other with such freedom and liveliness that I felt I ought not to listen to their artless prattle. As I put the light out and felt the bedclothes and darkness overwhelm me, it was with an awful sense of terror, that sort of sensation which I should think going down in a diving bell would give. Suppose the apparatus goes wrong, and they don't understand your signal to mount? Suppose your matches misfire when you wake, when you want them, when you will have to rise in half an hour, and do battle with the horrid enemy who crawls on you in the darkness? I protest I never was more surprised than when I woke and beheld the light of dawn. Indian birds and strange trees were visible on the ancient gilt hangings of the lofty chamber, and through the windows the Boomges, and the ships along the quay. We have all read of deserters being brought out, and made to kneel, with their eyes bandaged, and hearing the word, to ire given I declare I underwent all the terrors of execution that night, and wonder how I ever escaped unwounded. But if ever I go to the Ath Hotel, Rotterdam, again, I am a Dutchman. A guilder for a bottle of pale ale, and that bottle a pint. Ah! For shame, for shame! Mine ease and mine inn. Do you object to talk about inns? It always seems to me to be very good talk. Walter Scott is full of inns. And on Quixote and Il Blas there is plenty of inn talk. Sterne, Fielding, and Smollett constantly speak about them, and, in their travels, the last two tot up the bill, and describe the dinner quite honestly, whilst Mr. Sterne becomes sentimental over a cab, and weeps generous tears over a donkey. How I admire, and wonder at the information in Murray's handbooks, wonder how it is got, and admire the travelers who get it. For instance, you read, a means, please select your towns, 60,000 inhabitants. Hotels, and see, Ion Door, good and clean. E. Lion D'Argent, so-so. E. Lion Noir, bad, dirty, and dear. Now say, there are three travelers, three inn inspectors, who are sent forth by Mr. Murray on a great commission, and who stop at every inn in the world. The eldest goes to the Ion Door Capital House, good table d'hote, excellent wine, moderate charges. The second commissioner tries the Silver Lion Tolerable House, bed, dinner, bill and so forth. But fancy commissioner number 3 the poor fag, doubtless, and boots of the party. He has to go to the Ion Noir. He knows he is to have a bad dinner, he eats it uncomplainingly. He is to have bad wine. He swallows it, grinding his wretched teeth, and aware that he will be unwell in consequence. He knows he is to have a dirty bed, and what he is to expect there. He pops out the candle. He sinks into those dingy sheets. He delivers over his body to the nightly tormentors, He pays an exorbitant bill, and he writes down, Lion Noir, bad, dirty deer. Next day the commission sets out for Arras, we will say, and they begin again, colon La Cochin d'Or, La Cochin d'Argent, comma La Cochin Noir, and that is poor Boots in, of course. What a life that poor man must lead. What horrors of dinners he has to go through. What a hide he must have. And yet not impervious. For unless he is bitten, how is he to be able to warn others? No. On second thoughts, you will perceive that he ought to have a very delicate skin. The monsters ought to troop to him eagerly, and bite him instantaneously and freely, so that he may be able to warn all future handbook buyers of their danger. I fancy this man devoting himself to danger, to dirt, to bad dinners, to sour wine, to damp beds, to midnight agonies, to extortionate bills. I admire him, I thank him. Think of this champion, who devotes his body for us, this dauntless gladiator going to do battle alone in the darkness, with no other armor than a light helmet of cotton and a lorica of calico. I pity and honor him. Go, Spartacus. Go, devoted man, to bleed, to groan, to suffer and smile in silence as the wild beasts assail thee. How did I come into this talk? I protest it was the word in set me off, and here is one, the Otel de Bellevue, at The Hague, as comfortable, as handsome, as cheerful as any I ever took my knees in. And the Bavarian beer, my dear friend, how good and brisk, and light it is. Take another glass, it refreshes, and does not stupefy, and then we will sally out, and see the town and the park and the pictures. The prettiest little brick city, the pleasantest little park to ride in, the neatest comfortable people walking about, the canals not unsweet, and busy and picturesque with old world life. Rows upon rows of houses, built with the neatest little bricks, with windows fresh painted, and tall doors polished, and carved to a nicety. What a pleasant spacious garden Arin has, all sparkling with autumn flowers and bedizened with statues. At the end, is a row of trees, and a summer house, over the canal, where you might go, and smoke a pipe with Mynheer Van Dunk, and quite cheerfully catch the agate. Yesterday, as we passed, they were making hay, and stacking it in a barge which was lying by the meadow, handy. Round about Kensington Palace there are houses, roofs, chimneys, and bricks like these. I feel that a Dutchman is a man and a brother. It is very funny to read the newspaper, one can understand it somehow. Sure it is the neatest, gayest little city, scores and hundreds of mansions looking like Chang Walk, or the ladies' schools about Chiswick and Hackney. La Gros Lot. To a few lucky men the chance befalls of reaching fame at once, and, if it is of any profit morituro, retaining the admiration of the world. Did poor Oliver, when he was at Leyden yonder, ever think that he should paint a little picture which should secure him the applause and pity of all Europe for a century after? He and Sterne drew the 20,000 prize of fame. The latter had splendid installments during his lifetime. The ladies pressed round him, the wits admired him, the fashion hailed the successor of Rabelais. Goldsmith's little gem was hardly so valued until later days. Their works still form the wonder and delight of the lovers of English art, and the pictures of the vicar and Uncle Toby are among the masterpieces of our English school. Here in the Hague Gallery is Paul Poeter's pale, eager face, and yonder is the magnificent work by which the young fellow achieved his fame. How did you, so young, come to paint so well? What hidden power lay in that weakly lad that enabled him to achieve such a wonderful victory? Could little Mozart, when he was 5 years old, tell you how he came to play those wonderful sonatas? Poeter was gone out of the world before he was 30, but left this prodigy, and I know not how many more specimens of his genius and skill, behind him. The details of this admirable picture are as curious as the effect is admirable and complete. The weather being unsettled, and clouds and sunshine in the gusty sky, we saw in our little tour numberless Paul Poeters the meadows streaked with sunshine and spotted with the cattle, the city twinkling in the distance, the thunder clouds glooming overhead. Napoleon carried off the picture by Murray amongst the spoils of his bow and spear to decorate his triumph of the Louvre. If I were a conquering prince, I would have this picture certainly, and the Raphael Adonna from Dresden, and the Titian Sumption from Venice, and that matchless Rembrandt of the dissection. The prostrate nations would howl with rage as my gendarmes took off the pictures, nicely packed, and addressed to Mr. the director of my imperial palace of the Louvre, at Paris. This side uppermost. The Austrians, Prussians, Saxons, Italians, and see, should be free to come, and visit my capital, and bleed with tears before the pictures torn from their native cities. Their ambassadors would meekly remonstrate, and with faded grins make allusions to the feeling of despair occasioned by the absence of the beloved works of art. Bah! I would offer them a pinch of snuff out of my box as I walked along my gallery, with their excellencies cringing after me. Zenobia was a fine woman and a queen, but she had to walk in Aurelian's triumph. The prosit was plus delicat. En usus vos, monsieur monsieur. The Marquis says the acaba is delicious. What a splendor of color there is in that cloud. What a richness, what a freedom of handling, and what a marvelous precision. I trod upon your excellency's corn. A thousand pardons. His excellency grins, and declares that he rather likes to have his corns trodden on. Were you ever very angry with Salt about that Murillo which we have bought? The veteran loved that picture, because it saved the life of a fellow creature, the fellow creature who hid it, and whom the Duke intended to hang, unless the picture was forthcoming. We gave several thousand pounds for it. How many thousand? About its merit, is a question of taste which we will not here argue. If you choose to place Murillo in the first class of painters, founding his claim upon these virgin altar pieces, I am your humble servant. Tom Moore painted altar pieces as well as Milton, and warbled sacred songs and loves of the angels after his fashion. I wonder did Watteau ever try historical subjects? And as for Greuze, you know that his heads will fetch 1,000 L, 1,500 L, 2,000 L, as much as a Sevres abrid of Rose Dewberry. If cost price is to be your criterion of worth, what shall we say to that little receipt for 10 L? For the copyright of Paradise Lost, which used to hang in old Mr. Rogers' room. When living painters, as frequently happens in our days, see their pictures sold at auctions for 4 or 5 times the sums which they originally received, are they enraged or elated? 100 years ago the state of the picture market was different. That dreary old Italian stock was much higher than at present. Rembrandt himself, a close man, was known to be in difficulties. If ghosts are fond of money still, what a wrath his must be at the present value of his works. The Hague Rembrandt is the greatest and grandest of all his pieces to my mind. Some of the heads are as sweetly and lightly painted as Gainsborough. The face is not ugly, but delicate and high-bred. The exquisite gray tones are charming to mark and study, the heads not plastered, but painted with a free, liquid brush. The result, one of the great victories won by this consummate chief, and left for the wonder and delight of succeeding ages. The humblest volunteer in the ranks of art, who has served a campaign or two ever so ingloriously, has at least this good fortune of understanding, or fancying he is able to understand, how the battle has been fought, and how the engaged general won it. This is the Rhinelander's most brilliant achievement, victory along the whole line. The Eidwatch at Amsterdam is magnificent in parts, but on the side to the spectator's right, smoky and dim. The Ive Masters of the Drapers is wonderful for depth, strength, brightness, massive power. What words are these to express a picture? To describe a description. I once saw a moon riding in the sky serenely, attended by her sparkling maids of honor, and a little lady said, with an air of great satisfaction, I must sketch it. Ah, my dear lady, if with an H. BB, a Bristol board, and a bit of India rubber. You can sketch the starry firmament on high, and the moon in her glory. I make you my compliment. I can't sketch the five drapers with any ink or pen at present at command, but can look with all my eyes, and be thankful to have seen such a masterpiece. They say he was a moody, ill-conditioned man, the old tenant of the mill. What does he think of the Anderhelst which hangs opposite his night watch, and which is one of the great pictures of the world? It is not painted by so great a man as Rembrandt, but there it is to see it as an event of your life. Having beheld it, you have lived in the year 1648, and celebrated the Treaty of Munster. You have shaken the hands of the Dutch guardsmen, eaten from their platters, drunk their Rhenish, heard their jokes, as they wagged their jolly beards. The Amsterdam catalogue discourses thus about it. A model catalogue. It gives you the prices paid, the signatures of the painters, a succinct description of the work. This masterpiece represents a banquet of the civic guard, which took place on the 18th June, 1648 in time Great Hall of the St. George Steele, on the St. Joel at Amsterdam, to celebrate the conclusion of the peace at Munster. The 35 figures composing the picture are all portraits. The Captain Witz is placed at the head of the table, and attracts our attention first. He is dressed in black velvet, his breast covered with a cuirass, on his head a broad-brimmed black hat with white plumes. He is comfortably seated on a chair of black oak, with a velvet cushion, and holds in his left hand, supported on his knee, a magnificent drinking horn, surrounded by a St. George destroying the dragon, and ornamented with olive leaves. The captain's features express cordiality and good humor. He is grasping the hand of Lieutenant Van Wavern seated near him, in a habit of dark gray, with lace and buttons of gold, lace collar and wristbands, his feet crossed, with boots of yellow leather, with large tops, and gold spurs, on his head a black hat and dark brown plumes. Behind him at the center of the picture, is the standard bearer, Jacob Banning, apostrophe in an easy martial attitude, hat in hand, his right hand on his chair, his right leg on his left knee. He holds the flag of blue silk, in which the Virgin is embroidered. Such a silk. Such a flag. Such a piece of painting. Emblematic of the town of Amsterdam. The banner covers his shoulder, and he looks towards the spectator frankly and complacently. The man behind him is probably one of the sergeants. His head is bare. He wears a cuirass, and yellow gloves, gray stockings, and boots with large tops, and kneecaps of cloth. He has a napkin on his knees, and in his hand a piece of ham, a slice of bread, and a knife. The old man behind is probably William the drummer. Apostrophe he has his hat in his right hand, and in his left a gold-footed wineglass, filled with white wine. He wears a red scarf, and a black satin doublet, with little slashes of yellow silk. Behind the drummer, two matchlock men are seated at the end of the table. One in a large black habit, a napkin on his knee, a hawse coal of iron, and a linen scarf and collar. He is eating with his knife. The other holds a long glass of white wine. Four musketeers, with different shaped hats, are behind these, one holding a glass, the three others with their guns on their shoulders. Other guests are placed between the personage who is giving the toast and the standard bearer. One with his hat off, and his hand uplifted, is talking to another. The second is carving a fowl. A third holds a silver plate, and another, in the background, a silver flagon, from which he fills a cup. The corner behind the captain is filled by two seated personages, one of whom is peeling an orange. Two others are standing, armed with halberds, of whom one holds a plumed hat. Behind them are other three individuals, one of them holding a pewter pot, on which the name Pook, apostrophe the landlord of the Hotel Deal, is engraved. At the back, a maid servant is coming in with a pasty, crowned with a turkey. Most of the guests are listening to the captain. From an open window in the distance, the facades of two houses are seen, surmounted by stone figures of sheep, There, now you know all about it. Now you can go home and paint just such another. If you do, do pray remember to paint the hands of the figures as they are here depicted. They are as wonderful portraits as the faces. None of your slim Vandyke elegancies, which have done duty at the cuffs of so many doublets. But each man with a hand for himself, as with a face for himself. I blushed for the coarseness of one of the chiefs in this great company, that fellow behind Ilium the drummer, splendidly attired, sitting full in the face of the public, and holding a pork bone in his hand. Suppose the Saturday Review critic were to come suddenly on this picture? Ah! What a shock it would give that noble nature! Why is that knuckle of pork not painted out, at any rate? Why is not a little fringe of lace painted round it, or a cut pink paper? Or couldn't a smelling bottle be painted in instead, with a crest and a gold top, or a cambric pocket handkerchief, in lieu of the horrid pig, with a pink coronet in the corner? Or suppose you covered the man's hand, which is very coarse and strong, and gave him the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.